Is there anyone on the telephone line? Okay, so let's get started. Do we have anyone on the line? Is there anyone on the line? Okay, thanks. So we have a pretty full agenda this afternoon. Let me just quickly review through that. We'll start with our reports from the constituencies on their morning discussions. Is there anyone in here from NPOC right now?
He'll
be back. Okay. And then we will have our NCSG policy discussions. We've got five issues we want to go through on the policy issues, and then we need to prepare for our discussion with the board of directors. And then we'll break at 15:20 to go meet with the board. They are in room La Paz C, which is in the different building, and we'll have to pack up our stuff and walk over there and then meet with them and pack up our stuff when we're done and walk back over here. And then we'll be back over here at 16:45 to finish up our meeting, and we can finalize our preparation for the GNSO meeting tomorrow. And then we break for the day at 17:30. And so that's our general agenda for the day. Okay, so let's get started. Let's start with the reports from the constituencies on their morning discussions. And Constantinos, chair of NCUC, can you give us a quick update on the morning discussions in NCUC meeting?
Sure. This morning, NCUC had what I can safely call a fantastic policy discussion. I mean, we touched a lot of issues and we discussed very substantive issues. There was a brief update from myself on the NCUC charter, which will be placed out for the whole membership to review after the Costa Rica meeting, and there is going to be hopefully a vote within the next 40 days. When it comes to policy, we discussed the issues that are before the Council right now and issues that are also of great concern to the membership, and in particular the issue of the special status of protection for the Olympic marks and the Red Cross names. We also discussed issues relating to the WHIS review team report that was just being released, and there is a public comment period ending on the 18th. We also touched on defensive registrations as well as law enforcement agencies' issues, and also we introduced and we touched upon the issue concerning how human rights fit within the ICANN ecosystem. Finally, we did some strategizing. We tried to identify those items that we feel NCUC should be focusing on, and we discussed, we started initial discussions about the event in an NCUC event in Toronto, which will follow the very successful summit in San Francisco. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Constantinos. We've got a representative from the not-for-profit operations constituency, NPOC, Klaus Stoll. So if you could give us a quick update on what transpired in this morning's NPOC meeting, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you very much. As you know, that NPOC is a very new constituency, and the point what we were concentrating out on this morning was to outreach in general to NGO community in Costa Rica, and I was actually very happy. We had a full room and we had some very good presentation, but what aspires out of the whole discussion, to make long things short, is that NPOC of course wants to participate and will participate in the policy discussion, as we did a statement 2 days ago regarding the proposal how to resolve the conflict around the Red Cross and the Olympic Committee. But I think it's fair to say that one of our main intentions for the foreseeable future will be, beside contributing to the policies, will be to outreach to the NGOs, inform and educate NGOs, and then trying to engage those NGOs who are really interested in the internet governance process in ICANN. As whatever part and in whatever constituency. This is basically the state we are at the moment, and I just want to say that it is not surprising but always gratifying to see how much interest the NGOs in general show in the topic of internet governance. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Klaus. I appreciate it. So let's just delve right into the NCSG policy discussion for this afternoon, and we've got five main issues on the agenda: new GTLD applicant support and reserve names in new GTLDs, which is the request from the Red Cross and the Olympic Committee. The third issue is law enforcement negotiations with registrars and the RAA. The fourth issue is the who is privacy concerns. And finally, if we have time, some discussion on SOPA, PIPA, domain name takedowns, and DNS filtering issues generally. Okay, so I know at least in the NCUC meeting this morning, some of these issues had been discussed at a constituency level, and so for many people, some of the groundwork has already been laid in terms of explaining what the issues are to others. But for others, this will be the first time that they will have heard about some of these issues today. So let's try to keep that in mind rather than always referring back or referring back to this morning's discussion or something, because many people were not here or people were in different meetings this morning and so don't know what the others were discussing. Okay, so let's start with the reserved names in new GTLDs, although our counselors really aren't here, and except for Joy and Wendy and Rafiq, so half of our counselors are here. God, that's pretty sad. Anyways, okay, so let's start with that issue, and Konstantinos, if I could ask you, I know you're probably tired of talking about this issue, but you know, for 48 more hours, I think if you could maybe bring us up to speed on this issue and where we are and what the issues are on the table for tomorrow, I'd really appreciate it.
Well, that's where it gets a little bit confusing now. Jeff Newman, who is the chair of the drafting team that was created for those issues, circulated yesterday a motion, a text of the motion that it will be submitted to the council for a vote. In between that time, and of course, it asked constituencies and stakeholder groups to come back to go back to him on that very motion and basically share the group's views on this text. After the email, however, there was some sort of a new development, whereas both the IOC and the Red Cross said they were asked originally to submit a list of the languages that they seek protection for. However, after an email was received, they said that this list will not be produced any longer, and the issue of the languages will be what currently the applicant guidebook is saying, which I can find right now in order to share with everybody, if you give me a brief second. Okay, what the proposal now too about the issue of the languages will read is the follows. The GAC has proposed that the IOC and RSRC names should be protected in multiple languages, all translations of the listed names in languages used on the internet. The list of protected names that the IOC and RCRC have provided are illustrative and representative, not exhaustive. So what I am not clear about right now is whether a new motion a new text is going to be circulated. That's the part that I'm not really clear about, and I think also Jeff made a comment in the mailing list whether, you know, we need to propose a new language for that. So that's where we are right now. I think Joy wants to speak on that matter as well, so, you know.
Thanks. Just by way of background, I see there's also a message from Greg as well, from the drafting team, proposing a range of options in relation to Recommendation 2, including simply removing Recommendation 2, because I think he's asking whether it's necessary, given that without it, the status quo is, in fact, the applicant guidebook. So I guess what I'm saying is that there are still seem to be members of the drafting team proposing amendments to the recommendation, and its final form is not yet clear.
Did anyone else want to jump in the queue on this? Okay, so we will come back to this one when we come back to specifics on voting. The next issue is new GTLD applicant support. And Avery, you've been active in those groups. Could you give us a quick update on where we are in that and a suggestion for a way forward, please?
Sure. But first, there's no motion or anything dealing with this in front of the council, is there? I don't think so.
On what?
New details.
No. Okay. So then I'll just give you a basic recap of where there are. So the JAS recommendations, as people know, were accepted, and a application support program was created. The application support program both defines how the application happens and how the application for aid happens, and basically talks about there's basically anybody applying for aid has two applications that go in at the same time. In one, they're applying for support, and in one, they're applying for a new GTLD. All of the applications for support will be reviewed during the first round of the processing. If there's only one round, then the second round will be processing those applications of people that applied for support. So there's a set of criteria by which one qualifies for support. There'll be a pile of money, and basically they will have ranked if you... No. And there will be he was making the jokes about the priority in applications. No, this is if you've applied for support, you're automatically in a later batch. And one doesn't need to go any further than that to find out what batch you're in. There's really two reasons for that. One reason was that gives them time to process the support application to find out whether you're going to get support. Two, that gives more time to do fundraising. It gives time that if there are any auctions for some of that money to get funded to get funneled into support. At the moment, all the support fund has is $2 million that the board put in. At $140,000 per application, that will only give 14 applications or something like that. So what they will do is basically they will rank the support applicants. There'll be a certain threshold below which you don't qualify. If you don't qualify, your application is dead in the water. You don't get support. You don't even get a GTLD. You don't get considered for a GTLD. That's one of their game anti-gaming mechanisms, that if you don't qualify for support, don't apply for it. But then they just softened it a little bit to make sure that those, if you just fell through because people thought that you didn't qualify because you couldn't afford to pay for supporting one, well, then that wasn't an exclusionary. But anyhow, then what basically happens is at the end they go through and say, okay, we can support this number. Those applications then funnel through to the regular application processing. For the others that qualify but for whom there's not money, they've had an extra year to try and fundraise. Maybe they've managed to get some more money. Or they can have a staggered payment over the course of the next year while the application is being funded. Or they can drop out and get most of the money they've spent up to that point, get their $45,000 back. So that's pretty much the program. The program will be administered by a support applicant review panel, the SARP people are talking about. The SARP is looking at the moment through March 31st for people to be the ones that sort of do the evaluation of all these support applications. And it's based on the criteria that the JAZZ created and their document, and I'm not going to try and go through them because I would actually have to go to Rafiq to remember them all. But anyhow, those people will do that. One of the things that a lot of people have sort of informally decided that those of us that were on the JAZZ who wrote the criteria should basically not be the ones that become the SARP, the panel that gives out the thing, that you sort of have a conflict that if you create the conditions and you make the judgment on the conditions that you've got some sort of conflict. So we're all available to give advice, et cetera, but we're not the deciders. Okay, so those are two things. So I don't know that there's enough applicants for the SARP. You've got until March 31st. I encourage anyone that thinks this is an interesting issue, an interesting problem, and wants to help, to help with the applications, especially looking for people that understand running a TLD, understanding how people game ICANN. The only way to really catch the gamers in this is to have experienced gamers, people who understand development economics and can actually look at a non-Marina Del Rey financial statement and understand what makes sense and what doesn't. And so you're not looking at it and saying, what, you can't even afford a hamburger. How could you possibly run a GTLD? So basically looking for people with a wide variety of ICANN-specific and development area economics, et cetera, specific talent to apply for the SARP. And what they're trying to do is make sort of small teams that handle just a small batch of applications. Coming to the last point, we don't know how many applications for support there'll be. One of the fundamental problems we've been having is outreach. Not only was outreach problematic for the whole GTLD application thing, how many people outside of the community and Davos know about new GTLD applications? You know, there hasn't been real outreach, but there's even been less outreach for the applicant support. And sort of there's one theory that said if there'd been really good outreach about the new GTLD stuff and everybody in the world kind of knew about it, not everyone in the world, I'm exaggerating, but that it had gone way beyond our bounds, you might have actually already reached lots of people that said, really cool, I've got something I want to do. Oh, I don't have the money. Okay. But in this case, those people probably haven't even been reached. So there's 2 weeks left to the to registering, and then there's another 2 weeks for a total of 4 weeks left to apply. Outreach is almost done, but not necessarily. And one of the things that I've been appealing to just about every group I've spoken to on this is, if you know people who should be applying, they're ISPs in a development area, they're a community organization in a development area that's concerned and having a GTLD would really assist them in doing their work, and they've got the wherewithal to do it, there's not only the financial assistance, there are a group of knowledgeable volunteers that are willing to help them write the applications and figure out the technical responses and so on. Because part of the JAZZ was not only financial support, but advisory support. So that's where we're at.
Let me just ask a quick question before I open up the queue on that. So who will be selecting the members of the SAR?
I'm not completely positive, but what the ICANN staff told the GAC is that they would be working in cooperation with the JAZZ, but of course you've got the chair of the JAZZ sitting beside you, to figure out who. Now, it could end up half of the Jazz, or a good part of the Jazz, the at-large part of the Jazz, are also members of the at-large working group that I'm currently chairing on new GTLDs. So there are people that will help them. They did tell GAC that they would be coming to all of us for something to help them do it, but I don't know.
Okay, thank you very much, Avi. I really appreciate that update. Let's open up the queue on this issue. For folks who are just coming into the room right now, we're talking about the new GTLD applicant support program. And Rafiq, you're first in the queue.
Thank you. It's Rafiq for the transcript. About the SARP, my understanding that till now there is only 10 applications. And for the people who, applicants who asked for support, it's around 11. That's what Kurt and Carla informed us in the, during the update in GNSO Council in Sunday. I was informed, like you, this day that they maybe they will come to the Jazz and the subgroup of Jazz and board members. But they didn't send any information to the mailing list. So yet.
It makes sense that they would come to that subgroup because that's who they've been interacting with. And since the application period doesn't end until the end of March and everything's always been done just in time a week late, I don't think it's surprising that they haven't talked to us yet.
But they inform every time they are talking to us, but some I'm not aware about what's happening. And the outreach, I raised the problem to Kurt on Sunday that it's not enough because I sent some comments to that report sent by the communication team in ICANN that the focus on social media is not enough. But I didn't get response, and I asked it again. I want response to my feedback. For the SARP application is still open till the end of this month, so I encourage people. And I do agree that it's not the Jazz members who should be there. We need to avoid such conflict of interests.
If I could just add one comment to that. I'm hoping that there are more than 10 now volunteers on the SARP because I've been buttonholing a lot of people, and if none of them have volunteered yet, I'm depressed.
We may expect more now because the ICANN meeting, it's, there is like even that pins with the support applicant.
Great, thank you very much. So we started a queue on this. I've got Hugo and then Elan, and anyone else want to get in the queue on this? Okay, go ahead, Hugo.
Trevi, Sudan. By which criteria you can accept or reject the applicant? And if my applicant is reject, application is reject, can apply again?
In this round, no. In future rounds, yes. The criteria for whether their application for a name can remain and they find other funding, actually I think they've changed it, and I believe they can go find other funding, but
why is this round no?
Because there would be, you mean apply for financial support again? I guess because the why no? Because they didn't design it that way is really all I can say. In fact, that's been an actual issue with every single part of the new GTLD application. There's pretty much one pass through one part of the evaluation, and there's almost never a chance to go back through that evaluative process again. And so I think that's just in the general nature of the program that ICANN defined, that you still may be able to apply for the TLD, but you'll have to find the money somewhere else. You won't be able to apply for that particular fund.
Okay, thank you very much. Alain?
Alain Béranger from NPOC. A question and a comment. My question is, are the people working on the evaluation of the applications for subsidy, Are they going to be only volunteers, or are they going to be paid? I don't remember.
I'll have a
comment. I read the terms of reference of the qualifications and the tasks asked of the evaluators, and it's both in terms of expertise profile and both in terms of time commitment. It is very demanding, and it looks to me like it's almost, it could be as much as half time over the period under consideration.
Right. Okay. I should have answered the first question while I still. I got the second one in mind, and the first one slipped. Okay, they are volunteers. There's the possibility of, if there is particular expertise that's not needed, they will pay for outside advice from a professional in the particular area. There was a question of why not pay these people to do this as opposed to counting on volunteers where it's a half-time job. And I think within the ICANN context, lots of people work half-time to full-time jobs for no money, and so far only the board has decided to reward itself with money. And that's all I can say about that one. I don't know. Beyond that, the volunteer, it's a volunteer organization, and for those that do it, it's very much an avocation, I believe, and, you know, or an insanity. But I think the time is correct. I think it's a relatively short amount of time in terms of, you know, several weeks and several months. It's probably somewhat similar to a NOMCOM type of commitment where you're on, all of a sudden you've got an intense plateau of work, and then it goes down. It's certainly not like being a chair of a stakeholder group or of a council or of an AC or a board member. It's a lower level of volunteer work. Oh, yeah, but Bard isn't volunteer anymore. I forgot. But it's a lower level of work than many of those things, I would predict, but who knows?
Great. Thank you. Did anyone else want to get in the queue? Yes, please, Hugo.
Yeah, my name is Jeremy Wanker. I would like to find out, maybe from your own understanding, why is the details of the applicants not being made available until a given date, and the given date is not either pronounced or precise. Because for me, I will be thinking that if people are aware of the applicants, maybe from a particular region, and that is lacking, some other that could also spur up some other maybe ISPs to come from that area and start making the application. But now everything is kept under closet. You don't know who is applying for what, and you know the application fee is very huge that one need to look very well before investing. So,
okay. I think that's a more general question than just the applicant support program. I think that one probably comes down to the level of competition and gaming within this. If somebody saw that you were applying for an interesting name that they hadn't thought of, and they had the money to be able to beat you in any auction, and that the expectation is in the ICANN community that would happen. So therefore, the confidentiality of the applicants and the strings is being kept secret so that only those who genuinely come up with the idea themselves and go to the effort of applying for it are the ones. Because if I was, you know, into exploiting and I saw that you were applying for something and I knew you had no money, wow, what a good idea for me to apply for it with all my money. So I think that's the main reason for why they keep it quiet, is because they don't trust us to not unfairly compete with each other.
Thanks. Did anyone else have any questions? or comments on the new GTLD applicant support issue? Okay, thank you very much, Avery.
Thank you.
Let's go on to the next issue on our agenda, which is the law enforcement negotiations with the registrars and the RAA agreement. And I'm going to ask Wendy, who's been following this issue very closely, if she could give us sort of an update on that and suggestions for how to go forward. Thank you.
Okay. So, yeah, there are several things going on right now with regarding law enforcement recommendations, registrar accreditation agreement, who is review team report. So the registrar accreditation agreement is being negotiated between registrars and ICANN with updates posted to a wiki. We can comment on that wiki, although it's not clear where those comments go or who is, if anyone is ever looking at them. As we've been pointing out, the negotiated RAA will have to come back to council for ratification, and council may or may not like what it sees if there's not better participation and transparency in the current negotiation process. So substantively, we've been concerned about some of the requirements or potential requirements for who is validation and the costs and burdens that those could impose on legitimate registrants, particularly on individuals, on not-for-profit associations, on registrants from developing countries, all places where the standard validation schemes for that exist for credit card purchases and mail back might not work well in this context. We also have the problem of what if legitimate registrants are blocked? The other big piece of that negotiation is what's going to be required, or as I see it, what's going to be required of privacy and proxy registration systems. I can try, at the request of law enforcement, is trying to require some certification or accreditation of providers of privacy and proxy services, trying to make its contractual tentacles reach further so that people can't use unaccredited or independent services to mask their information. And those are of great concern to those of us in protecting the privacy of individuals and organizations. I had a productive meeting with the registrar's constituency. They invited us in to talk, they're interested in working with us and suggested that another place to focus, yes, adding even more to our discussions, would be best practices for disclosure, that they see a trend going toward requirements on privacy and proxy services that they disclose or reveal the registrant's name when somebody comes in accusing them of wrongdoing. We might be able to help by helping with standards for when can a privacy or proxy service legitimately refuse that request, what should they require before acceding to that request, how can they distinguish between legitimate law enforcement requests to help track down a criminal or a spammer or an internet miscreant versus illegitimate requests meant to silence speakers or squelch unpopular speech or uncover a dissident and go after them using non-internet channels. So I think that there are good places for us to work with the registrars. And Joy, I'll note to you particularly, they were very interested in the human rights framework as a way to help them and ICANN evaluate what they're being asked to agree to in this registrar accreditation agreement.
Terrific. Thank you very much, Wendy. Let me open up the queue on this issue now. If there's anyone who's got any questions or any comments on the issue of the law enforcement negotiations with the registrars, please raise your hand. Let me know. Get in the queue. Joy, please.
Thanks. And thanks, Wendy, for your excellent work on this topic. The only sort of comment I would make in relation to law enforcement is that I noticed in relation, for example, to the HUA's report that there seems to be this reference frequently to national legislation and compliance with national legislation by respective law enforcement agencies. And I mean, it's quite clear that, for example, under international human rights standards, such national laws have to only limit, for example, freedom of expression in very prescribed circumstances. And so I do have a concern that the reference to sort of in compliance with national laws may be slightly problematic from the point of view of rights compliant activities and rights of compliant law enforcement requests. And I'm not sure quite how that's resolved, but I just want to note that it's not necessarily an end of the situation in terms of that reference.
Thanks, John. I think that is a concern, and in thinking about what we might offer in helping develop best practices, it might be going into more specifics of what does compliance with national law look like and how can we use the provisions in national law to protect people engaged in speech, and where does even the national law have exceptions for to disclosure obligations when necessary to protect speech.
Thanks. Yeah, and it might also be requiring some sort of verification from law enforcement agencies that they are in fact meeting their human rights obligations. So in other words, putting the onus on them to certify that rather than putting the onus on registrars or others to do so.
Thanks very much, Joy. Anybody else want to get in the queue on this issue? Okay. So we can move on to the next substantive issue on the agenda, which is the WHOIS privacy concerns. And once again, I want to ask Wendy if she could, as someone who's been following this issue very closely for, what, nearly a decade now, if you could give us an update on this, please.
Thanks, Robin, and apologies to those who heard the update that on it this morning or heard me at one of the public forum microphones or the council microphone talking about WHOIS. I continue to be concerned that WHOIS is the wrong box for our privacy concerns and our law enforcement interests. But because it's the tool we have, that's where everybody engages in lots of fighting. We have both the WHOIS task force, WHOIS review team task force report on which we're drafting some bullet points as we speak in response, and the work that's coming out in of the PDP before council on some of the RAA work. There's a thick WHOIS motion before council. Put briefly, we have been advocates for a long time that domain registrants, both individuals and organizations, are entitled to protect their legitimate privacy interests, even when registering domain names, and that the public display and disclosure obligations have to be balanced against that. We're seeing real pressure from law enforcement to make the Whois database more accurate and a better contact and tracking, and as Milton calls it, surveillance point. And we need, to come up with better ways to protect privacy there. Now, some of that may be helping to distinguish between the private and the public, and you'll get better, more accurate data if you don't insist that registrants publish it all. And if we can help to set up a real legitimate criteria for legitimate law enforcement access, which is difficult because how do we identify the legitimate law enforcement and how do we identify the legitimate access requests and how do we do all of that without making it tremendously expensive and inconvenient for parties on any side of the debate. But my feeling is that we're going to be facing more and more demands that we do something about who is, and that something is make it more accurate and more revealing about domain registrants. So we need some good privacy advocacy in response, and need to engage the I've suggested we work to engage the law enforcement in what their real concerns are and how we can help them address those without violating everyone's privacy all the time.
Great. Thank you very much for that, Wendy. Anyone want to get in the queue on the Whois issue? Yes, please, Streamer.
Thanks, Wendy. My concern, really, on who is on the review they have done so far, is I was wondering, is there any way of validating information on who is? Because at times, if you are following up on someone who may have registered domain or something, maybe for fraudulent purposes, and you want to really track it down, it's called that maybe most of the contents there or the details the person may have filled may not have been a true position of his contact really. Is there any way or is there any plan to check some of these contacts?
So you're raising the concern that Whois doesn't give good ways of contacting people, yes? Yes. So that is part of what's being studied in regard to validation of Whois data. And it's also one of the concerns that the Whois review team report identified that could be separated from the pure accuracy of the data. If we focus on contactability, perhaps we have a narrower, more useful focus than on accuracy. So that suggests turning some attention to what do we need to get out of the Whois database, including contact rather than accuracy.
Great. Thank you very much. Milton, I wanted to ask you if you could briefly go over the point you made yesterday at the microphone on who is. I just think it's so relevant to this discussion, and if we could, you know, focus on that for a minute, I'd appreciate it.
Okay. Well, there's always been kind of a false assumption that Whois is something that sort of normal consumers use to increase their trust in the internet or to check up on the origin of websites. But the review team basically found that the ordinary internet user doesn't really know what Whois is and rarely uses it. And this makes it clear that that Whois is basically a mechanism for much more professional actors who are basically engaged in surveillance of internet users, that they're basically anybody from spam fighters to law enforcement agencies to trademark lawyers. They're all basically looking at Whois as a source of raw data for surveillance of internet activity. And that's an important perspective to keep in mind because, you know, this linkage between consumer trust of the internet and Whois data is really a very weak, a much weaker connection than we thought it was. And many of the things, you know, that you might want to do to increase trust on the internet might have to do with rather put more emphasis on like consumer protection enforcement on certain services at the national level rather than, you know, going to all these lengths to make Whois data, impose burdens on end users and registrars in order to make the data slightly more accurate. There's also the question of whether ICANN should invest a lot of money in trying to make an integrated Whois service available through its own website that is available in all languages. If this is something that's used by specialized services, number one, they should probably be paying a lot of the cost of that, and number two, it's likely that ICANN might be putting a lot of money into something that very few people would actually use. And so, you know, they're also talking about a massive education program to try to get consumers. So instead of drawing the obvious conclusion that consumers are not using Whois and maybe their assumptions about it are wrong, they're saying, well, now we have to spend a lot of money to educate people to use it the way we falsely assume that they should be using it in the first place. So it's kind of a just something we need to be aware about.
Thank you very much, Milton. on this Whois issue, anyone else want to get in the queue, have something they want to add on this? Okay. Let's move on to the next issue on the agenda, which is SOPA, PIPA, ACTA, domain name takedowns, and general DNS filtering issues. And whether or not or to what extent ICANN ought to put its toe in the water and weigh in on this or be a forum in which these issues are more thoroughly discussed and debated. The sessions that is organized by the ICANN staff at just about every ICANN meeting is a session on DNS abuse issues. And there's a lot of the staff organizes these sessions, and they don't consult us and what the topics of these discussions should be or who the speakers should be. But so what they do is they bring in this parade of law enforcement officials one after another to give a parade of horribles about why we need to clamp down on the domain name system because of abuse of the internet. And so there's been some so at the ICANN meetings, they're sort of asking ICANN to get involved and to weigh in and do something about this. There have been actual proposals in the real world, if you will, national legislation, international treaties that are designed precisely to deal with this issue, DNS abuse, or arguably intended to deal with DNS abuse issues. And, for example, ACTA, PIPA, SOPA, which are two pieces of U.S. legislation, but there are other countries have similar legislation in their countries that all try to manage the way the DNS is architected in order to ensure there can be no trademark infringements on the internet. So while the problem, if you will, is something that I can often discusses and tries to get engaged in,
we'd like to see some discussion, or would we like to see some discussion on some of the solutions that have been proposed in international treaties or national laws or other places that will have an impact on this issue, and also will have an impact on ICANN's ability to manage the security and stability of the DNS. So there were a lot of enormous number of papers and statements that were sent forth by internet engineers, for example, Steve Crocker and Paul Vixie, and a whole just an enormous number of people who are engaged at ICANN, people who design the internet, about the problems with some of these proposals and how they would essentially break the internet and the DNS system. So it seems to me that there is some argument for why ICANN should care, why participants at ICANN who are interested in maintaining the security and stability of the internet might want to use this as a forum to discuss these measures and possible ways to help shape them in a way that could respect the rights of all parties. So I just kind of want to open this up and see, get some views from the floor on whether or not, or to what extent, or in which direction they would like to see these kinds of discussions flow. So would anyone like to get in the queue on this? Yes, Carlos.
Hi, Robin. Just to give information and maybe to give an example on how civil society and non-commercial issues can be affected by initiatives like this. Last week in Brazil, we had a bill of law that was presented to our Congress that is a somewhat translation of the SOPA bill of law in the U.S., and it was really interesting because, and folks here from the CGIBR can correct me, but this bill of law created or gave to the Brazilian Internet Steering Committee the competence, the possibility to label a website in Brazil as an infringing website. And as soon as a website received this banner, this classification as an infringing website, it could be applied to its all kinds of sanctions that are pretty much well known in SOPA and PIPA, including the blockage of research engines and methods of payment and stuff. So one idea here, and then to bring back our very common issue of human rights in ICANN, is maybe to use SOAP and PIPA as an example on how this issue goes much broader than simple tackle the ICANN universe and see how registries from the CCTLDs end up suffering from this idea that you can seize domain names and that you can have a certain authority in specific countries acting as a way to labeling websites as an infringing ones. Certainly this is an example of how human rights, we know that we press this button a lot on human rights and ICANN, but certainly this is a good example, and we could use the network of NCUC to get examples from the CCTLDs, from the countries in which civil society faces challenges such as this one. This is just an example to give on this topic.
Thank you very much for that, Carlos. Konstantinos, and then Evan.
Thank you very much, Robin. This is Konstantinos Komaitis. I think we need to make a distinction here. I mean, basically, we need to identify the various issues with these pieces of legislation. On the one hand, you have the technical issues and how these takedowns affect the DNS, and I think that's where ICANN is coming in as the administrator of the domain name system and ensuring that the domain name system runs smoothly. ICANN should actually engage in that debate and provide possibly start analyzing and researching and the impact that these domain name takedowns might have eventually on the technical stability of the internet and the domain name system. And of course, I am not a techie myself, but all the papers seem to go towards the same direction, that there is going to be a severe impact on DNSSEC and how domain names get to be resolved, etc., etc. This is the first issue, and I think that's where ICANN needs, that's the involvement of ICANN as far as I'm concerned. The second issue is the way, and it relates to the role of the law enforcement agencies that we saw over the past few years within ICANN. I mean, it was very interesting. There was a domain name takedown in the UK concerning an R&B website that provided some torrents, but at the same time had blogs. And actually, it was proven that most of the songs that were provided through the website were actually given by the artists themselves in order to promote themselves. Having said that, the domain name was taken down, but what is very interesting about this process was the message that was displayed on the on that website by Soka, saying that even if you have visited the website, you are liable for 10 years of imprisonment plus an unidentifiable fine. And this it's this intimidation, basically, that is, for me, extremely dangerous. It's, you know, it is one thing to say that this domain name has been taken down because it promotes trademark copyright and trademark infringement and the promotion of counterfeit goods, but at the same time, actually intimidating users into thinking that even visiting this website makes them liable, for me, creates a problem. And that problem is that these law enforcement agencies are becoming legislators, are becoming enforcers. You know, the separation of powers does not even exist any longer. They are becoming the adjudicators, and they're telling, this is what's going to happen to you, and you might as well pay attention, because if you don't pay attention, then we'll literally come and, you know, knock on your door and take you down and most probably arrest you. And the message communicated to the users should not be that. The message communicated to the users needs to be that copyright infringement is not a legal act. They need exactly to understand what copyright is all about. So for me, there are those two issues. And I think that, you know, especially civil society has a huge role to play, because as Carlos mentioned, there are huge human rights implications. Needless to say that from a law perspective, messages like that are completely and utterly against basic legal standards and norms. Thanks.
Thank you, Konstantinos. I wanted to ask Evan, who's the liaison from at large with the NCSG, if he could give us a quick comment on this. I know that you've personally been working on these issues, and it is something that at large is concerned about. So if you could just quickly give us what at large's position is and suggestions for moving forward on this.
Hi, this is Evan. I can talk personally, and I can also talk sort of from ALAC. What's happening this week on the subject is very little, if only because ICANN, it seems, has resisted most attempts to try and have a dialogue about that topic here this week. So with or without the rest of the mechanism, at large is probably going to have a dialogue, going to have to continue a dialogue, and our issue is simply getting this on ICANN's radar at all. There's lots of corners here that seem to be denying it as even an issue that ICANN has to deal with. Again, you know more about the internals of the GNSO than I do, but it seems like the GNSO is resisting an SO-wide dealing with this issue. And so at large is going to be tackling it on its own between now and Prague. But I don't think anything specific is going to come of it this week, if only because the debate hasn't filtered down to the regions and to the ALSs. And so we've got this, you know, depending on how you want to call it, either very inclusive or very unwieldy or both. But it's something that we want to try and do in order to get that. There's going to be a lot of diversity on the issue simply because of how widespread things are through at large. But there are a lot of people, myself included, who see this as something that is dangerous to ICANN, that it can choose to close its eyes on, but sooner or later, the parties that are ignoring it are going to get hit by it. At very least, one of the things we're looking at doing is making sure that registrants and end users are informed, so that if they go to a TLD, at least from the end user point of view, they don't know if a TLD is a generic or a country code or this or that. When something goes wrong, something goes wrong, and they don't know how to deal with it. They may filter something up to ICANN, and then the response is, well, that's a country code thing. Okay, we're done with it. And to the end user, they don't know the difference. They're just saying, I can't get there from here. And anyway, it's a larger issue, but this is definitely part of it. There's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of obfuscation going on when it comes to somebody trying to figure out, why isn't this working the way I expect? And so that's sort of the approach that we're trying to take, at least from our end.
Thank you very much, Evan. I really appreciate that. I've got Mary in the queue, and then anyone else? Maria. Okay. Mary?
Thanks, Robin. This is Mary Wong. And Evan, I'm really glad, I think we all are, that ALAC is spearheading something on this. I just wanted to clarify something about the GNSO, that after the restructuring, the GNSO Council can't just act on its own accord or form a group or something. It really is up to the stakeholder groups or at-large liaison or someone to bring it up to the council. If there is going to be any sort of formal action, there's nothing to prevent individual groups, constituencies, or stakeholder groups from collaborating and working on a recommendation. But any formal action has to be brought up to the council, assuming that that is what the community wants.
Yeah, and that, at least from me looking from the outside in, is sort of, well, if it's not a PDP, how do you put it through? And I don't know how much of a mechanism there is for non-PDP type initiatives going through, even if it's just informational.
All right, Maria.
Thanks. Hi, sorry, this is Maria Farrell. I missed the beginning of the session. One thing, just Konstantinos was talking about that particularly egregious UK example where the Serious and Organised Crime Agency put up a really dreadful message which had been crafted by industry and captured people's IP numbers and displayed them to them to intimidate them and say, yes, we have your IP number and you could be arrested for visiting this website. It was really appalling. The Open Rights Group, which I'm involved with on their board, has written to SOCA to remind them that actually they're law enforcement, not industry enforcement, etc. So, we've done a bit of education on it, and it's not been a completely useless event. But I just wanted to say, I'm really broadly sympathetic to the idea of pursuing this agenda within ICANN, but also aware, following Milton's email just the other day, how I don't even quite know how to conceive of what are the hooks that we have generally on, where is ICANN's role and what can we hope to achieve here. On the VeriSign and .com second level domain issue, and VeriSign was taking down names and was it changing the root zone, and I realized I kind of think I'm quite knowledgeable about these things, but I actually didn't have a really clear understanding. I felt quite stupid afterwards, to be honest. However, I think this is an opportunity for us to pursue a positive agenda and not always be reacting to defensively to things like the Olympics Committee, but I'm not sure exactly what the hooks are, so I would love if there was some way we could figure out how to do that, both to educate ourselves and also to constructively just change the terms of the debate around here and not be shot down so easily as in the case of the GNSO, that's not our job. So from a position of some ignorance but sympathy, I'd really like to hear more about this.
Thanks, Maria. Wendy?
Thanks. Let me try to sort of think about how we within ICANN might address these issues and some of the constraints on ICANN addressing it. It includes of the issue of what is a multi-stakeholder body to say about issues of national legislation, and if we go beyond the technical coordination, and will we be sort of shot down or reined in by governments? Will we pique the GAC to get more engaged and, heaven forbid, find consensus around, yes, national governments should be able to legislate domain blocking to when it supports the goals of national law? Will we get more things like the thought paper on domain blocking that lays out lots of the ways that governments or others interested in blocking seizing domains should make sure they check all of the right boxes actually to get it seized? I'm still thinking about it too, and I would like to be able to say things that are useful in opposition to SOPA, PIPA, ACTA, et cetera, from the ICANN stance as well as from outside of ICANN, where I'm actively engaged in opposing them. I'm just not sure whether it's right for ICANN or ICANN constituent parts as opposed to all of those who come and participate in ICANN and then go just outside of ICANN and say, we oppose SOPA, PIPA, ACTA. I think the technical community has done a terrific job of making technical papers explaining why domain blocking fails as a technical matter that help eventually to fuel those debates, but they haven't done it with ICANN hats on.
Did thanks so much for that, Wendy. Did anyone else have anything that they wanted to add? Yes, Joy.
Thanks, and thanks for raising this issue. Certainly, you know, APC and its network members have been very concerned about the disproportionate nature of the proposals in legislation such as SOPA and PIPA, but it's not limited only to those specific, you know, domestic pieces of legislation, although obviously with significant impact globally. Many countries are moving to develop legislation which would also allow them to interfere with the operation of the DNS on a variety of grounds. And we very much see that these two initiatives are only just the next iteration, that more will come, and that definitely a strategic look at ways to advocate around that is needed. And also that I know this topic is being discussed in other forums that are also concerned about, well, what could ICANN's role be? How is it possible for those concerns to be brought to constituency groups within ICANN? So I guess I'm saying that by way to support the initiative and trying to explore ways appropriately within ICANN's mandate in looking after issues, you know, coordinating certain policies in the global public good. And to think about and to say that there are others who would like to reach out to these groups to support anything that we might do here.
Thank you very much, Joy. Milton?
Yeah, I'm mindful of what Maria said, trying to be proactive and constructive and leading, but unfortunately I just have another question that's kind of reactive, and it is, what about that thought paper? You know, what is our take on that? Where did that come from? Is that the staff being helpful and contributing, or is it the staff straying into policy? Is it the staff have too much time on his hands and should be doing other things? I mean, what can somebody with more knowledge of where that came from fill me in on that, or is that a too petty of an issue to waste our time in on it?
Maria?
I think just stuff I heard in the bar last night on this. Patrick Jones was telling me that the security team, ICANN security team, got pulled in to do a lot of support work trying to provide information and educate US Congress people and some Senate people, I presume, on the SOPA PIPA thing. And so they spent, I think, many weeks basically going along trying to teach them how the DNS works. It's possible this might have come from that exercise. I'm not quite sure. As it happens, I think they did quite a bit of the Lord's work on that, on trying to explain to these guys, you're breaking the DNS. So they were supporting Steve Crocker and Paul Vixie and those guys. But I don't know where this thing came from. I'm sorry, going to digress for a moment and tell a really silly story. A number of years ago, one of my uncles was the Irish Minister for Justice, and sat him down at the kitchen table one day and said, look, here's this awful stuff the Home Office is doing about traffic data retention and interception and surveillance, and you can't believe it, and they're doing this, and this is why it's bad, it's a terrible idea, here are all the things they're doing. And he was asking me more, oh, that's interesting, and what are they doing? Dreadful, dreadful. How are they doing that? And after a while, I just turned and looked at him and said, Michael, you're just asking me how they're doing this stuff to find out how you can do it, aren't you? He's like, yes, I am. So unfortunately, giving more information was actually a way of, not winning the argument, just helping them figure out how to do it. There you go.
Thank you, Maria. Anyone else want to speak to this topic? Okay. So the next topic on our agenda is preparing for our discussions with the board this afternoon, and which is in about 25 minutes, I believe we have to break. Let me just double check. No, 15 minutes, excuse me. We have 15 minutes before we have to break. So we've got 15 minutes to prepare for our meeting with the board. And we've got, the board asked us what topics we wanted to discuss, and then also sent us a list of three topics that they wanted to discuss. So these will be the things that are on the agenda this afternoon with the board. So the issues that were proposed by the NCSG were two, and first was how to protect ICANN's multi-stakeholder bottom-up policy development process. So this is really sort of one of these esoteric, theoretical, big picture, high level issues, as opposed to some of the details of specific proposals that are being put forward. But the real thrust of this is how do we know what is policy at ICANN and what is the implementation of policy, and how can we work better to protect the appropriate balance between the various constituencies and stakeholder groups for influence in the policy development process. How do we ensure that proper ICANN process is followed while we develop policy here? What is the appropriate role for governments and law enforcement in ICANN policy development? So I think this question, a lot of it comes from some of the requests that we've seen lately that sort of circumvent the policy development process and try to go straight to the board or to the GAC rather than participating in the bottom-up process. So I think that's one of the concerns that brought this forward. I think another concern has to do with the role of law enforcement. Are they part of the GAC? Are they, we've had law enforcement agencies want to join non-commercial users. I mean, there's just this real growing presence of law enforcement agencies at ICANN. And is that appropriate? And what's the right role for them here? I think these are some of the kinds of questions that we had wanted to, or this was the first question that we wanted to discuss with the board. The second is internationalizing ICANN. How do we increase participation from developing country actors? ICANN is so historically filled, the participation consists of people from U.S., Canada, Europe, business communities, and how do we really try to bring developing country participants, but not only just the participants, but sort of the outlook and the different perspectives that people can have. And again, not only to the participants, but to the board, to the staff, how do we really get an appropriate legal framework for ICANN? It's a global governance organization on the one hand, but on the other hand, it's a private California corporation.
And so, you know, how do we get these two concepts to work together in a way that works for the benefit of the internet and internet users? And considering the geopolitical sensitivity and the broader relationship between the U.S. government, ICANN, and the ROOT. So these were the two issues that were proposed by the NCSG to discuss. And then the board of directors had three issues that they wanted to raise with us. First is a question that they've raised with all of the various stakeholder groups and communities this week that they wanted to get some community feedback from. And that is, what will be, in your view, the medium-term impact of the new GTLD program on the structure of ICANN in general and the challenges it brings to the GNSO, its constituencies, and policy development process? What are the potential issues and how do we anticipate them? So that's sort of the board's high-level question. And then they had two more concrete, specific questions that they discussion topics that they wanted to raise. And first was the resolution of any conflict between the constituencies within the non-commercial stakeholder group. And then the second is the views on the RAA. This is a more concrete issue that we're currently working on here at ICANN. So we've got basically five discussion topics on our agenda for the board. It's a one-hour meeting, so I'm not sure how much we'll be able to dig deeply into these discussion topics, but that's where we are. So let me open up the floor. We've got about 10 minutes or so, and see how people want to address these issues. I've got Klaus, and then I've got Mary. Anybody else want to get in the queue? Okay, Klaus, up to you.
Thank you. I think the one issue of the five was the relationship between the NCUC and NBOC. We just simply should refer to the statement, end of story, and not discuss 1 minute or 10 seconds more. And if something goes wrong afterwards, we can always come back. with respect, and now I apologize to everybody for the next 2 points if I'm getting boring. I really think that there's an overarching problem still of outreach and information, and even if an academy has been proposed, I think we really need to go back and say, look, we need funds, we need programs, we need education to inform our stakeholders what is actually going on, and from then maybe 3 or 4% or whatever we can reach up and get integrated into the process. But we are still not doing the base work. And the third one, and I'm sorry that I'm starting with that again, I also think we should tell the board about the proposal from NPOC, how to solve the situation with the exemption for the Red Cross and the IOC. We made a straightforward proposal, and the point is, it's not so much about the proposal and the wording. It's about getting. I think I'm realistic if I'm saying we won't get very far in the first round. That will be voted through. But at least we should say, for the second round, we should aim and strive to get away from specific names to a specific group of people, as smaller the better, and get away from basically creating precedents and all the dangers we are talking about the last 3 days. And just if we can get the message through, come on, there needs to be a change in the basic change in the thinking. That's all.
Thank you very much, Klaus, for that. I've got Mary and then Wendy. Anyone else want to get in the queue? And Evan? Okay, Mary?
A couple of quick suggestions. This is Mary Wong, by the way. And I wonder if it will be helpful to the discussion of the board, and I think we've done this before, but I think the GNSO Council certainly does this, is to have someone as the designated spokesperson for a particular question who can frame it. And so, for example, we'd have one for each of them. And I don't know if we're going to get to the resolution of the issue with NPOC. I mean, I think we still kind of have a problem of how that's phrased. But to the extent that that's going to be something we discuss. I mean, my suggestion for that would be probably Klaus or Alain would be appropriate people to lead that part of the discussion, because I don't think you were here when that discussion was held with the board the last time. So that's one suggestion, and of course the ones for the other topics. For the first topic on the multi-stakeholder model, I think two things. One that might be helpful would be, Robin, as you started saying, you listed examples, and I'm sure the board knows all the examples, but I think whoever's leading the discussion will be helpful if you say, look, here's why we have the concerns. Here are two or three of the recent examples where, whether it's perception or reality, some of the community feels that the processes were bypassed. Give specific examples. And the second point I had on that was just on the, I'm not sure that I would want personally, if the group wants to do this, that's fine, but I'm not sure that I would want to bring up the question of the appropriate role of law enforcement, because I think all the board's going to say is, well, point to the operating principles of the GAC and the bylaws, where they can be observers and where reference is made to public authorities, whatever that means. So I'm not sure how that's going to advance anything. I'd rather us just stick to the multi-stakeholder point and the bypassing of the processes for the first topic.
Okay, thank you very much, Mary. I've got Wendy and then Evan.
So I'm trying to get the questions in email. Maybe I'll pass for the moment.
Evan?
Actually, that turns out to be very convenient, because what I was going to say is now very nicely dovetails onto what Mary said. And with the suggestion, and this is to follow up in conversations that we've been having with board members, mainly informally and individually, but it's really come out, not so much specifically about law enforcement, but a general tendency towards bilateralism as opposed to multi-stakeholderism. And maybe if it is framed that way, and saying there's a lot of these one-on-one high-level exclusive conversations going on as opposed to broad-based community ones, they're happening over law enforcement, they're happening over the Red Cross IOC thing. These are all the results of bilateral things. They sort of took hold because of the GAC scorecard and haven't let go. And so I don't know if maybe that's an approach to take that may get you a better, more constructive response out of them. And that dovetails over what we've been talking to them as well.
Thank you very much. That's very helpful, Evan. Wendy, did you want to say something?
I think those are good, helpful ways of framing the question of keeping the multi-stakeholder model working effectively. And I would be happy to be the designated respondent on views on the RAA.
Okay. Did anyone else want to get in the queue on this issue? Our board discussion, we've got 3 minutes left, 2 minutes left. Okay, so let me just quickly ask Klaus if he would be willing to address the issue, be the designated respondent on the issue of any conflict, resolution of conflict between the constituencies. Is that okay?
No, but Alain Béranger.
I'm sorry. I didn't hear what you said, actually.
No, but Alain Béranger.
Alain is the appropriate person for that? Okay, wonderful. Thank you very much. So we've got that one taken care of. Wendy's volunteered to be our designated respondent on the views on the RAA. I can discuss the multi-stakeholder bottom-up policy development process, unless somebody else would like to volunteer for that. Okay. And on the issue of internationalizing, I can. Yeah, we could volunteer Bill, because I know this was an issue that he brought, that he wanted raised. So let's ask him if he'd be willing to be our respondent on that question. And on the issue of the impact of the new GTLD program in general, do we have anyone who would like to volunteer to be sort of our respondent on that issue? Avery, I know you've been knee-deep in new GTLD issues. Would you be willing to take that one on, and if we get to it?
I wasn't actually paying attention, and I wasn't sure I was going to be there for the whole
just
meeting.
Say yes, Audrey. Yes. Say yes.
Well, let me go over what this question is again, since you may want to respond to it. But so the issue is what will be the short to medium or medium term impact of the new GTLD program on the structure of ICANN in general, and the challenges it brings to the GNSO, its constituencies and policy development process. What are the potential issues and how to anticipate them? I mean, I think you're really the best person for that, considering your history with the GNSO and so knee-deep in new GTLD policy now. Would you like to be the designated respondent?
I suppose I could. I was thinking of cutting out of the meeting early, but okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, so we've got designated speakers on each one of these topics. Let me just quickly say where we're going, remind everyone where we're going and when we're going to be back. So I believe we're going over right now to La Plaza C, and it's supposed to start in 10 minutes, and it's for 1 hour, and then we come right back here for our final hour today, and we're going to go over in much more concrete detail how our counselors are to vote tomorrow. Okay. Thank you all very much.
Okay. And this is an hour meeting? I don't see how that fits into the reorganization of the GNSS.